Lefty pundits who advocate strategic voting need to be exposed as the right-wing elitists they are. I don't know about you, but I'm despairing of ever finding a true lefty pundit. As I've said many times, I don't know how you can call yourself a leftist when you advocate voting for corporatists. Even so-called ultra-leftists like Noam Chomsky tell us to vote for corporatists. And frankly, it's time we stood up as a group and started to call bullshit. Every last one of these leftists needs to be called out as a sheepdog. Professional sheepdogs. They remain undetectable until it's time to harvest the supporters of cheated candidates after the cheating has been accomplished. It's not always easy to tell who the ops are. At first, they say all the right things, like Cenk Uygur. Even some good faith voters are sucked in by lesser evilism arguments. The mask falls off, though, when people who clearly know better start to tell you to vote for corporate sock puppets. That's when I want to see all of their income sources, both over and under the table. When it comes to electoral politics, leftists need to stop trying to be strategic and simply be leftists. Giving your vote to corporatists gives them something they need, which is the illusion of our consent. If we do mean to be strategic, we need to stop stupidly giving them our endorsement. By giving them our endorsement in the form of our vote, we give them permission to exploit the 90% ad infinitum. If you, like Ben Burgess, for example, argue that it won't make any difference if we withhold our votes, you are falling into the trap of despair. You are conceding the fight. You are allowing them to trick you into thinking that the world will be slightly less worse if you continue in the stupor of leftist Stockholm syndrome. That stupid argument, by the way, came from Vlad Vexler, if you follow him. As one of the comments under yesterday's episode aptly stated, there's no reason we can't continue to build left power whilst denying them our consent in the form of our votes. The idea that voters are being chumps if they refrain from lesser evil voting should be stuffed in the same place as Russiagate propaganda. Now, before I get going with the sheepdog idea, I want to call out a few people. Sam Cedar, Cenk Uygur, Jimmy Dore, David Dole, Mike Figueredo, Kyle Kalinske, Katie Halper, David Pakman, Vosh the sheepdog, Ben Burgess, Vlad Vexler, and perhaps Birion Sondal, and even Keaton Weiss. This comment showed up under yesterday's show, Contemplations of a Stranger. Hi, I'm a great fan of your show. After 2016, I never imagined that the so-called progressive lefty channels could ever support a candidate like Biden, but they did. The silver lining of 2020 is that it has exposed all of them as controlled opposition and paid sheepdogs. Now I'll break in and say I'm not sure if they're being paid, but they're sure acting like it. None of these advocates of lesser of two evils ever answered the most basic and simplest of questions. After 40 years of neoliberalism, if people still have to vote for the lesser of two evils, when will the left draw a line? It cannot go on for perpetuity, can it? Also, in your discussion with Due Dissidents, that was with Keaton, this question was not answered. Your guest was arguing that the left should vote for Biden / corporate Dems until they put an institutional infrastructure in place. Now I'll break in again and say I'm not sure that's what Keaton was arguing. I'm not sure he was saying we should continue to vote for Biden and corporate Dems. I think he was arguing that it doesn't matter if we do or not. Why can't the left build their infrastructure while withholding their vote from corporate Democrats? Ding, ding, ding. I don't think I have ever seen a left as pathetic as the American left. They have no self-respect whatsoever. Another comment from about 3 weeks ago is from Neo York. He says, if you're looking for a great clip to put on your show, I have one for you at 8:30 in this new and nuanced angle of effective versus expressive argument, which concludes, I kid you not, with eating shit. I swear he makes it sound like there is logic to it. Sometimes it's good to eat shit. The eat shit argument is from Vlad Vexler. He says some things in an almost hypnotic tone, which really could make you believe that shit was tasty.
There was an amazing political philosopher who I love called Judith Schklar. And she always started with the negative. She always took a value and started with a negative version of it. She wouldn't start with justice. She would start with injustice, should be focused on avoiding the worst things happening to people, avoiding politics deteriorating in a certain dimension or a certain respect. Now, again, this is a distinction where you can be right on both sides, but it's also a distinction where you can get carried away if you take one side too far. And in this case, of course, the side that can get too far, can go too far, is the side which just says, look, I'm simply in the business of improving the world. Because there are times, this is what Chomsky is saying, you know, about our time now, when you've got to take a stand to halt a dramatic deterioration of the world and think less in terms of improving it. And anyway, indeed, unless you take that step against the deterioration that's imminent, you ain't going to get much of a chance to improve the world anymore.
He seems, by his facial expressions, to realize he's trying to feed us shit. He's saying the best we can do is to keep the world from deteriorating, at least in these times. But these times are always these times. We just keep swallowing this shit year after year. We keep being told, oh, well, in these times, in these horrible times, the best we can do is to slow down the deterioration. And if you fall into this trap, you're like Denethor of the Tolkien novel. You just keep thinking that the enemy is way too strong and we could never actually stand up and solve things. And if that's the kind of weak-ass thinking you subscribe to, then I have no use for you, and neither does any leftist movement. I replied to Neo York, this guy reminds me of Vosh the Sheepdog. He also needs to be spanked. I went on and said, I replied under his video, Vlad's video, and he already replied to my reply. I hope we can get a fight started under one of my videos too. Then yesterday, Neo York said, you should be more inviting. Give them an opportunity to argue their case on your show. This conversation must be had. I've already seen quite a few arguments that go nowhere. The sheepdogs keep twisting things around and they ask framing questions like, have you stopped beating your wife? They seemingly can't just lay out the case for why we should withhold our votes from corporatists. They just keep trying to get into your head and make you think that shit is delicious. As I've said before, especially in comments under shows like this, that we really need to stop giving them what they want. They need the illusion of our consent. Neo York also said, Howl Underground, if you're up for an intellectual challenge, you should reach out to Ben Burgess. He is the author of Give Them an Argument, Logic for the Left. Very good read, by the way. He recently had a debate versus Nico House on the subject, should leftists in swing states hold their noses and vote for Biden? Ben Burgess argues yes, and Nico House argues no.
Left next time they dominated John Kerry and Joe Lieberman. There were several states in 2016 where the Jill Stein vote was bigger than the gap between Trump and Biden, certainly Michigan, where Trump beat Clinton by 0.23% of the vote. But not only did that not lead to the Democrats moving left, we got the most right-wing major candidate in the Democratic primary. So I think the idea that a couple percentage points of leftists withholding their votes is going to be some sort of way of exercising leverage. So if we don't do that, we're giving up leverage. I just don't know what that's empirically based on. I don't think we're going to have leverage one way or the other. I think that our strategy can't be about thinking about, okay, how is it that we're going to pressure centrist Democrats into becoming leftists? Because I think that's just not going to happen.
But that's not even the point. The true function of a left media should be to expose all the assholes who try to get us to vote for corporatists as elitist and as right-wingers. Again, you are allowing them to trick you into thinking that the world will be slightly less worse if you continue in the stupor of leftist Stockholm syndrome. Gay wedding cake notwithstanding, you can't give them your vote unless you're an economic right-winger. Taking a few leftist social positions doesn't make you a leftist. Struggling on behalf of the working poor is what makes you a leftist. Unless you're willing to withhold your vote from the corporatocracy, you're not a leftist. Now, while I might agree that it doesn't matter which racist rapist takes office, we're screwed either way, I still think that we can't afford to give Joe Biden and Kamala Harris our mandate in the form of our endorsement in the form of our vote. It isn't purely symbolic to withhold our endorsement. And Ben is wrong that it's only a few people. If every left-leaning voter withheld their vote, it wouldn't just be a few people. And yes, it would make a huge difference. I keep hoping to wake up from this horrible dream where nobody else on the left seems to understand that we can't vote for corporatists. Who are the people all along who have told us never ever to vote for corporatists? Where are they? We all keep watching the shiny object go back and forth, and we all keep thinking, oh yeah, shit actually is pretty tasty. We've got to figure this out, people. Yes, pile into the streets. Yes, riot. Yes, strike. Yes, take any action you can think of to build a coalition of leftists. Yes, build a new party. Yes, build leftist power. Institutional power, fine. But we've got to figure out that we have to stop giving them the illusion of our consent. There's just no tenable argument in favor of voting for corporatists under any circumstances. We have to unrig the game. We'll conclude with Birion Sondal and Captain James T. Kirk. Can the left still win 2020? Star Trek tends to be popular with the left because it depicts a version of a utopian leftist future. While we remain a long way from a post-currency, post-scarcity society, there is one particular concept popularized in Star Trek that is directly applicable to the 2020 presidential election. This is the no-win scenario known as the Kobayashi Maru, a training scenario introduced in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, that is programmed so there is no possible way to victory. We face the same type of scenario in the general election in 2020. Both Trump and Biden are tools of the oligarchy. The ruling class put a lot of effort into ensuring that Bernie Sanders did not win the primary so that the working class would have no truly viable option in the election. Stopping Bernie was far more important to the establishment Democrats than was stopping Trump. The ruling class has set up this election so that we cannot win, no matter which way we have voted. On the one hand, we get an old white man with credible rape allegations, a history of racism, militarism, and support for the corporate agenda. And on the other hand, we have Trump. While there are significant differences between the two, no matter which one is declared the winner, the oligarchy and capitalism win. There are numerous arguments that have been made as to why one or the other lying psychopath would be better for progressives. There are also arguments that have been made for voting third party or not voting. These arguments are a meaningless distraction from the true struggle. As long as we look through the narrow lens of electoral politics, the left is always going to lose. Now I'll break in and point out to what to me is obvious, that Birion is putting us onto a slippery slope again. Voting actually does matter because voting gives them our implied consent. Or by refraining from voting, we withhold that consent. I agree that the left is not going to win through voting, at least not now, but we still can make no argument that it doesn't matter because of the implied consent. Noam Chomsky, manufactured consent. That's a good argument. In a supposed democracy, they need the illusion of our consent. So it does matter. Voting does matter. Back to the story. Electoral politics are the domain of the ruling class. The system is so broken and corrupt that a mildly socialist candidate like Bernie Sanders would never be allowed to win. After two rigged Democratic primaries, it is absurd to think that we can outmaneuver the ruling class in their own domain. As Audre Lorde so powerfully told us, "For the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house." They may allow us temporarily to beat him at his own game, but they will never enable us to bring about genuine change. It is important that we stop attempting to use the master's tools, but begin to use our own toolkit to change the oppressive system. Okay, Birion, no disagreement there, but voting still matters in the meantime. And it still is necessary to hold the feet to the fire of anyone who tells us otherwise, including you. Back to the story. While the Kobayashi Maru test was designed to show that sometimes in life there are impossible situations, Captain James T. Kirk challenges this paradigm, saying, I don't believe in the no-win scenario. I like to think there always are possibilities. The way in which Kirk defeated the Kobayashi Maru scenario was by reprogramming the scenario to allow him to win. He went outside of the accepted parameters and created his own solution. This is what we must do with the political situation in the United States. We must both reprogram ourselves and others to get out of this dim cesspool of despair that Biden or Trump presents us. It is necessary to reprogram our own thinking. We must redefine winning and losing. As the 2020 presidential election is a foregone loss, we need to move outside of that realm and work toward a better society without being reliant on this broken system of the oligarchy. The media want us to focus solely on oligarch versus oligarch. People like Barack Obama want us to think that voting is the single most important thing we can do in our society. We should never feel guilty about our voting, yet vote shaming is running rampant on both social and corporate media. On the left, we must remember that no matter who is declared winner by the corporate elite and the broken electoral college, we were the ones who were fighting the hardest to defeat both candidates when we supported Bernie Sanders. Remember, we would not be in this situation if the 2016 primary had not been rigged. Bernie would have chosen 3 Supreme Court justices, not Trump. By all means, vote if you want to, but do so with the understanding that the top of the ticket is not the be-all and end-all of political activism. There are many important ballot measures and down-ballot races that can create a small impact of positive change locally, but far more important than checking boxes on a ballot is the organizing that must be done if we are going to survive the inevitable collapse of capitalism under climate catastrophe. So, Berrien, while I agree that organizing is more important than voting, voting still matters. Back to the story. Like Captain Kirk, we also must change the conditions of the struggle. With a Green New Deal and Bernie Sanders as president, there was a very slim chance of stopping catastrophic climate change. Now that option has been stolen from us, it is necessary to face the reality that what we are seeing now is nothing compared to what is coming. As Engels once said, bourgeois society stands at the crossroads, either transition to socialism or regression into barbarism. Rosa Luxemburg expanded upon this in the Junius pamphlet. Today we face the choice exactly as Friedrich Engels foresaw it a generation ago, either the triumph of imperialism and the collapse of all civilization as in ancient Rome, depopulation, desolation, degeneration, a great cemetery, or the victory of socialism that means the conscious active struggle of the international proletariat against imperialism and its method of war. As Trotsky would say, a perpetual rebellion. That was me. This statement accurately describes what we face today. With the added pressure of climate change, these are indeed dire times for society. Never have we needed socialism more than we do today. The most effective counter to oligarchy and the growing threat of fascism is leftist unity. It does not matter who you voted for or did not vote for. Wrong, it does matter. What matters, he should have said, what matters more is that you believe in the fight for a more just society, a society where the forces of capital no longer use the state to oppress the working class. As Joe Hill was about to die, he wrote a telegram to Bill Haywood saying, "Don't waste any time mourning. Organize." The capitalist class wants the working class to remain divided. This is why they worked so hard to stop the Bernie campaign and have continually attacked socialism. We must not allow our minor differences to divide us. Instead, we must unite against both neoliberalism and fascism. Now let me break in again and say, as I've said many times, we still need to unite behind principles. We can't just unite if we're not united on principles. And a bedrock principle is we must withhold our endorsement, our support, our votes from corporatists. This is something that must unite us. If we can't agree on that, then unity is an illusion. Back to the story. This can take many forms. Begin organizing your workplace. Join or form a mutual aid society. Organize or join a protest. Join a socialist reading group. Organize around progress issues and many more. You should say, Berrien, organize a huge general strike. As Che Guevara wrote, if you are capable of trembling with indignation each time that an injustice is committed in the world, we are comrades. Whatever you do, comrades, do not despair because the corporate overlords have installed another choice of the oligarchy. We are in this fight together. But I'm still going to hold out, Birion. I'm still going to say that we're not in this fight together unless we can figure out that we need to stop being sheepdogged into the corrupt Democratic Party by voting for them. And we have to remember that Bernie is a sheepdog, and we have to remember that AOC will become a sheepdog, and we have to remember that we never get anything by voting for Democrats. So not only must we withhold our votes from corporatists, at the present time, I'd say we have to withhold our votes from any potential sheepdogs. Which probably means, it means for me, that we're not going to be voting for any Democrats whatsoever. Democrats have a horrible habit of getting sucked into the power vortex. They suck up to power. Mama Bear Pelosi sucks them in. Chucky the Shroom sucks them in. We start with well-meaning, well-intentioned people who get sucked into the Democratic power vortex. The one thing that Movement for a People's Party has right is that we need to build something outside of either party. The part that they get wrong is that we need unity around a few key principles. And one principle is that we withhold our votes from corporatists. If we can't agree on that, then we don't really have a movement. We have a bunch of potential sheep in a system that is owned by the oligarchs, so that money is just going to do for them what it's done for the Democrats all along. Unless we find some way to become immune to the money and the power, we're going to end up with Movement for a People's Party going exactly where the Democrats have gone. We need a backbone, people. Don't vote for corporatists. It matters. So now I'll give Birion the last word. I will agree with Birion, Marx, and Trotsky that we need a permanent revolution. And I will agree with anyone who says we need more than just a political revolution. We need a real revolution. Muskets, pitchforks, guillotines, AR-15s, whatever it takes. But here is Birion's more gentle conclusion. I will conclude with the words of two of my favorite men. First, as Bernie Sanders said at the 2016 Democratic National Convention, "Together, together, my friends, we have begun a political revolution to transform America, and that revolution, our revolution, continues. Election days come and go, but the struggle of the people to create a government which represents all of us and not just the 1%, a government based on the principles of economic, social, racial, and environmental justice, that struggle continues. And I look forward to being part of that struggle with you." And lastly, in the words of the great Karl Marx, our battle cry must be the permanent revolution.